Happy Friday, South Carolina. Welcome to another episode of Four Quarter Friday. Smitty is up in North Carolina covering the ACC basketball tournament. We just finished up with South Carolina High School League basketball play last weekend in the CLA. We're going to be covering a lot of those games, recapping some of them. We talked about that last week. Prior to the game starting, we got Coach Trent Robinson on from the Westwood Red Hawks to come on and talk about his program and having a state championship in their under their belts now. And Smitty, we're going to be talking with Prep Hoops South Carolina girls side, Akeem Ballum, and Diamond Prospects Corey Welch coming up to start talking about baseball because now we're switching. But how you doing this morning, Smitty?
Doing well. Look, not going on a lot of sleep. I've been covering the late games at the ACC championship. And, hey, we're going to talk to Trent Robinson about this. I'm disappointed. Not enough South Carolina player representation. And after what I saw from the teams, especially from the Midlands, which we'll certainly get into with Coach Robinson, there's a lot of college talent that was on display at the CLA last week. So I'd like to see some more repped in the SEC and ACC basketball championships.
Absolutely. You know, the I'm showing my age a little bit, my youth. The famous actor from he's like, no respect. South Carolina doesn't get enough respect.
Yes, Rodney Dangerfield. And thank I agree. You. The Palmetto State doesn't get enough respect. You are showing your age, Steve. Rodney Dangerfield, yeah. I mean, that's the heart of my childhood, man. But I agree. I think that it's not getting enough respect. And we'll get into that with our guest, obviously. We talked with Austin Alexander from Diamond Prospects about baseball talent. And it was truly on display at the Classic. I loved last week what we got to see in the Palmetto State. That was exciting. All of the talent that was on the field, all that college and potentially pro talent playing together at Mike Johnson Park in Georgetown, and then in hoops, what you were, and Rob Williams, our colleague, were from inside the SEC, what you were treated to at the Colonial Life Arena. And not only was there a lot of talent on display, those games were great. Those were last minute, you had furious comebacks, big time rallies, shot making, coaching decisions. That was just an awesome crucible of talent and grit and teams reaching their destiny and reaching their peak. And you got to take it in at the CLA. It was an awesome atmosphere. And I'm with you. You and I have talked about it. We're going to get into it with coaches as we move on. I don't think there's enough representation on our state teams across the board, considering the level of high school talent, the players that you saw. Those kids can ball. I want to see more of it on the college floor in our state.
Yeah. And speaking of comebacks or rebounding from slow starts in some of these games, Westwood High School, as we bring Coach Robinson on here, they started out in the first quarter down 20-10 and rebounded to take the title back home to the castle. And Coach Trent Robinson joins us now. Coach, the nets have been cut down. The Westwood community has a new set of heroes to celebrate. You're joining us this morning. Have you got any sleep this week? Have you had time to process what this meant for your kids, the school, and your career?
First, thank you guys for having me, man. This honor, I think this is a great thing to have and just be able to come and talk about it. But the answer to your question is like a double in the question. I have a 1-year-old, so I don't ever get sleep. I don't ever get much sleep. But to answer the question, the last week has been crazy. It's been from the school, the community, to, you know, people want to do stuff for our kids, to interviews and podcasts of me talking about the great season, the great kids I have. It's been a whirlwind, but I mean, it's as a coach, it's what you want. Like, we complain about being tired, but like, the kids been enjoying every second of it. And as a coach, I just sit back and smile. Like, everybody asks me, has it hit yet? I say, well, two things has hit. I mean, I have 7 seniors, 5 of them, you know, 4 years ago, I was a JV coach. This is my 3rd year as varsity coach. So 5 of them played for me at JV their freshman year. So the point, so I was their only head coach they've had at Westwood. So that's hit. I'm like, wow, I won't coach them anymore. And then the other thing is just when I see the kids, I'm like, okay, it hits me that, you know, they got to end their career on a positive note. But I think, have I really only got to sit back and reflect and, you know, enjoy the moment? Not really, because I've been trying to make sure, you know, everybody's where they need to be, banquets, interviews, you know, talking to our principal, talking to our AD, getting ring sizes, shirt sizes, and then, you know, going home at 4 o'clock every day and trying to enjoy a moment with my daughter and my fiance. So
that's awesome, man. Well, let's dig into the season. Let's recap it a little bit. Obviously, the news is out now. DeMarcus Thomas and Jaden Cruz just went off. Jaden had 23 points. DeMarcus had 26 points. Both of them were 9 for 10 from the free throw line. And I remember watching that. I was just like, you know, this is such a treat to see a team come into the clutch and sink free throws. I mean, those you're not being guarded. Let's make these things. Like, it's one of the big sticking points with coaches. And you mentioned, I believe, with maybe Lou Bazhak after the game that in your first matchup with Greenville, hats off to them, by the way. What a incredibly coached team, incredible run they had as well. But you mentioned that they – your team didn't shoot the free throws as well in the first matchup. How big was that for y'all?
Yeah, I mean, it was huge. First, like I said, give a big shout out to Yerick Stoneman. So as much know, he was at Ridgeview around the time I was in college, at College of Charleston. So I don't know if people pay attention, you know, at the beginning of the year, especially in the, you know, around from 16 to 19, it's always some tropical event going on in Charleston where we had to evacuate and come home. So he always opened the gym. We would go play with him every morning. So hats off to a great coach, a great program, the way he turned around from, you know, being at Ridgeview, going to Oak Hill to coming back and being there, man. His hats off. We talk a lot, so that's a good coach, a friend of mine. But, yeah, man, when we played them the first time, we went 10 for 25 from the free throw line. So it was, you know, our initial game for our – we played them the first time. So, you know, we have, you know, a lot of people talk about Jaden, DeMarcus. You know, I have three other guards that play high level, high temp. And then my four man is a really, he started for me at the three last year. So we use him at the four a little more this year because he was just a lot more skilled. But so we played Greenville first time, man. We saw they full court pressed a lot of people, matched up man to man. So that was, I think, game number 9. I don't think before that, we've seen man-to-man. Every team wanted to zone us out. So we were super excited, man. We were like, okay, we could finally. Now, with the other games, eventually we would get a lead and teams have to run man at the end. But when we saw that, you know, they were man, we was like, hey, we're about to have fun. We're going to get what we want. And at halftime, I told my head, I said, we're getting everything we want. We just can't make free throws. At the end of the game, we lost by 5. I said, hey, you guys – got what y'all want. Y'all wanted teams to run man. We got man. We got to free throw line. Just didn't knock them down. So I think that was a huge testimony to this season. Because last year, I think as a team, we shot, and this is going to sound bad, we shot probably under 60, 50% from the free throw line last year. It was really bad. So that was a point of emphasis over the summer. And then I think that the Greenville game was one of the only bad free throw shooting games. But so we've just been hammering that, like, you know, for us coaches to allow you to play basketball the way you want, you have to hit free throws because we're going to, that should be what we want, teams to press us on, get paint and play out of paint. But, man, it was, so our gameplay, you know, we knew they were going to be different in state championship game. And I think Tucker for Greenville, he doesn't get enough credit, man. He, you know, a lot of people label him as a shooter, but he does a lot in between. So we just had to figure out how we wanted to guard him and then kind of match up everywhere else. They kind of similar. Their five man is really probably go to the next level to play a four because he can handle it a little well. He's athletic, can shoot it and defend. So we had to figure out how to, you know, make adjustments. And then we had to make adjustments in the game. You know, they got up 18-4 to start the game up and then at the end of the first quarter, 20-10. So we had to make a couple tweaks how we played. Like I told in the interview, I think as coaches, we were overcoaching. We tried to draw plays up, and I said, you know, now this game we had media timeouts. So in the media, I said, hey, guys, like, let's stay away from our cause. Let's stay away. Let's let them play, get a feel for this moment. And let's let, you know, if they see a mismatch they like, let's just let them tack it and play, you know, pick and pop. Let's screen and roll basketball, drive and kicks and play out of that. Because every time we caught something, we pretty much had a turnover or just guys trying to overthink. So I think that was huge coming in a state championship game like that.
This is Four Quarter Friday. We've got Trent Robinson. He has brought Westwood their first state championship in boys basketball. Coach, first of all, just look, if you've got a one-year-old, a fiance, and your kids have trouble shooting free throws, have your blood pressure checked daily. You're going to have your blood pressure checked all the time with that lifestyle that you're trying to live. But what I wanted to ask about, one of the things that we've really enjoyed talking to coaches about is like mentors and coaching connections. John Combs was the head coach at Westwood, and he's still very much in the basketball world right there in the Midlands. Do you have any advice you could share with us or anything you learned from John Combs as a young coach? And then now you're a championship coach and there's that great connection there.
Well, you know, you talked about half the story. So what most people don't know is Coach Combs is my coach at Ridgeview High School. And he was my brother's coach at Ridgeview High School. And if I'm 28, my brother's 33. So, I've known Coach Combs. Coach Combs seen me when I was running around the Ridgeview and the bleachers, the bad kid on the sideline. So I've known him my whole life. He's been the biggest mentor that one can ask for. So when I graduated from Charleston, the biggest thing I graduated from Charleston, then went to Bob Jones to play grad year. That was COVID year ended. So a lot of people ask, why did I go to Westwood instead of going to the school I graduated from? Well, I'm like, Coach Combs is the coach I played for. He had the perfect opportunity, and it's nobody else I would rather want to coach under, because we already had a really great relationship. Like, I played point guard, so me and Coach in high school had a lot of battles. He pushed me in practice, I pushed him in practice. I probably gave him a big headache sometimes. So we already had that connection where, like, as a coach, he can get on me and I, you know, won't feel no type of way. And as a, you know, young coach getting in, I can give him advice and he won't say any type of way. But I think his biggest mentorship has been huge. Like, every step of the way, he showed me how to build a program, X's and O's. He introduced a lot to me. So when I was able to take over, man, I used a lot of stuff that Coach Combs taught me. You know, a lot of our play calls, he can probably come to practice and he probably can tell you not like all our defense and nine, probably 5 out of 10 of our offense, because it's the same calls, just a little tweaks. Because as an assistant, I tell a lot of assistants, you get to sit back and learn. You get to sit back, but you get to watch some stuff that you can make adjustments to. Coach, he taught me how to be on the professional side. He taught me, you know, how to make connections, put me in the right situations. Like he wanted me to come to coaching clinics with him. He wanted me to go, you know, to work some camps to get my name out there. And he was the one that pushed me to apply for it. He was, you know, when I didn't know what I wanted to do, I love Westwood. He didn't know where he was going. So he pushed me to apply for, because he thought I was ready to be a head coach. You know, if I got the job at 25, he thought I was ready at 22, 23. And I was like, Coach, you're not trying to kick me out of here, are you? But he just, you know, he just saw something in me. And he wanted me to keep pushing myself and not get comfortable in any situation. Because he said, you know, you can be a long-term assistant under me forever, how long I want to be. But he said, would that really help you? Or should you be pushed to go out and see what you can get and step out your comfort zone? So, and after I got the job, man, me and Coach Combs, we probably still talk 1-2 times a week. It's not always about basketball, man. He's a big family man, a big religious guy. So, you know, he was one of the first ones I called about when I had when I found out I was having a little kid on the way, and just getting feedback from him. How do I do this now? I'm running a program, and, you know, being a younger father, being a younger coach. And so he was just able to just help me guide a lot, through basketball and through life. But I think the most important part, I think why we both got emotional on the court, just because how much of a mentor he's been to me as all around. So when he was the one to present me the ball, we had a little moment. I don't know if people, you know, realize, but man, it was, and you still think about that. It's still, I haven't processed that, but man, that was great.
Coach, that's some cool stuff. You know, obviously what I hear when you're talking about Coach Combs and that relationship you have is just somebody who believed in you for a long time. You kind of gave us the whole history there a little bit, but how has that molded your ability to maybe believe in your players from the time that they were JV to now y'all are, y'all won the state championship. How did that impact y'all's journey over the last year, the last 2 years, to lead y'all to where this point, to this point?
Man, it was because Coach Combs, he was actually one of the first ones to kind of get those guys in a, in an atmosphere they couldn't really see. Like, he would take them, you know. My 4 years ago, we had a kid, Arden Collier, signed to USC. Then now he's at Charlotte. I think this year he, you know, even led the American in 3-point percentage. But so he would, some of these younger guys, he would take them to these live events with College Coach over the summer when they were freshmen, because he was like, you know, they need to see this stuff early. So just kind of him staying on, like, hey, like, you know, you're a varsity coach, and we, you know, we care about varsity. But like we need these young guys. We need you to develop these young guys so they can be ready. So just that staying in my ear, like, you know, we want to make sure everybody in this program is getting better. So as my job as an assistant, and a lot of assistants, you know, if you, you come into the in high school, you know, you're not getting paid a lot. So you truly have to do it for what you love, for the love of it. So I was, I mean, I, this was the time I was, you know, when I got here, I was a young coach. I, you know, didn't have a fiance, didn't have a girlfriend, didn't, you know, live with my father. Man, I spent a lot of time at Westwood. So I would have, you know, I was a B team coach my first year. So after, you know, I would have varsity practice after school, then B team practice. And then I would stay and train players after that, man. It was just, and so coach, he, you know, he kind of, every year we got new pieces, like, hey man, you know, I think these are guys that we need to look into. So we knew when we got this freshman group, my senior group, when they were freshmen, we knew they could be special. Because number one, you know, and this doesn't mean much, they won their middle school championship. They've been playing together for a while. So, and they all chose, you know, we can speak realistically, you know, Ridgeview was the hot school around that time, but they all chose to make a commitment to come to Westwood when, you know, a lot of people from Ridgeview wanted them to go there. And, you know, so we had to cherish that. We said, man, this group can be special if they stay the course. And as, you know, they were seniors, as juniors, they struggled. You know, as when my first year we took over, I came, I had a player called, player named Tavares Bell, and he was just a gamer. So my first year we was able to go 22-3. So a lot of, you know, like DeMarcus, he was a sophomore that had a lot of playing time. He was my sixth man. But Jaden Cruz, what a lot of people don't know, he was on JV that year. As a lot of Jaden Cruz only played varsity 2 years. So fast forward to their junior season, you know, I remember having a conversation with Jaden. I was like, I said, hey, man, I think you could really make your mark being a defensive player. You know, your long arms. Like, Jaden came in high school 5'5", 5'6". A lot of people don't know that. He's 6'2", 6'3" now. So I said, man, I think I'm going to really test you. I'm going to push you. I said, pretty much this summer, you probably going to play more than my returners just because of your defensive ability. So I said, now you have to use that to now create offense, because he's been such a looking for an offense the last 2 years. And then, you know, we had a hot start our junior year, then their junior year. Then, you know, we reached a bump in the region play. We went 4-8. 4-8, it was tough. You know, that's part of the time I missed two games because my newborn. Then, you know, we had some, you know, had a death in the program from a, you know, parent for a booster club. So, you know, we really struggled the mental block, and we still was able to push to the third round. But, you know, the start of this year, those guys, they came as like they want to end high school how they came in, and I was champion. So they really, so I told them, I said, if that's what y'all want, we're going to do things a little different this year. Everybody's going to step up their comfort zone. And, you know, they bought in, they truly bought in, they trusted me, and their parents trusted me. And that's all you can ask for as a head coach. You know, you never know you're going to win, but all you can ask for is good kids and great families that's just going to trust the coach to, you know, everything won't be perfect.
Yeah. Before you joined us, coach, Steve and I were discussing more college players, more college exposure. I want to see more of these Palmetto State players because, you know, sometimes we hear there's not big-time talent in this state on a yearly basis. But, boy, in the Midlands, what was on display at the Colonial Life Arena and all the championships that came out of the Midlands, of course, you're not far removed from a collegiate career at the College of Charleston. So tell me, what do you see on the court, and what is it? Where's the disconnect? Why aren't we getting more players to our state programs across the board? I'm talking about everybody, because a lot of our state programs don't recruit heavily inside the Palmetto State.
I think right now a big thing is the transfer portal, but I think right now a lot is because we have undersized guards. But, you know, I think you got to trust. I mean, I One thing I do, I love watching undersized guards, man, from Kemba Walker to Shabazz Napier to Ryan Boatwright, man. As Pierre Jackson. So I've always told my players to study smaller guards, but I think that's the biggest thing because we have a lot of players, but, you know, a lot of our South Carolina players, you know, end up maybe going D2 just because we have 5'10", 6-foot guards. But I think with the right opportunity, man, South Carolina, we can play. Now, I think the state's getting bigger as a whole. It has some big kids, but it's always, you know, guys in the row. You always have guys that sneak out and end up in the NBA from South Carolina. Just like I played with Jarrell Brantley, you know, people that go get better. Because one thing about South Carolina, the training culture is really crazy. Like, people really train and really work hard around here. People will find places, not myself, but people will try to sneak into schools and work out. So guys here, they're dedicated. They want to work. So I think when they end up under-recruited and go to a program and they end up in college, I think they get a lot better and people ask where they come from. Well, I'm like, the only difference is here they have a consistent place where they can go to every day and work out. The weight room is different. You know, the meal prep is different. So, but I think a lot of kids here have the right, you know, they have the game. It's just about being in the right place, right time. So, I want it to go back where, you know, it's a, you know, like I think at the beginning of this year, Jaden DeMarcus should have had every D2 around here recruiting them. I think it was, you know, kind of tough that Jaden didn't get his first offer until, you know, maybe 2 months before the season started, and DeMarcus got his first offer in the middle of the season. I just didn't agree with that. Those guys should have had 5, 6, 7 D2 offers, you know, full scholarships waiting for them. But I just think the transfer portal hits and then, you know, money-wise hits. I do thank the coaches that, you know, have recruited my players, and I still have a couple more seniors that coaches are reaching out to. But what I tell kids nowadays, hey, just stay the course. If they will find you now, you have to work a little harder. I have to work a little harder. But, you know, this week, I think my biggest thing I hit on was I, you know, was on the phone with a lot of college coaches. And so I think that's why the week's been so crazy, because we've been knocking on some doors and getting a lot of good feedback from my guys. I think, you know, out of 7 seniors, I'll have 4 to 5 to go play basketball. So, I mean, as a coach, you know, the trophy's good. The state's good. But seeing these young men that have 4.3 GPAs, getting them to the next level will be even better, because, you know, all people need is opportunity. And when that door opens, now the rest is up to them.
Coach, last question before we get to a little bit of more of a non-basketball rapid fire ending here. We always like to ask questions that kind of let our audience get to know Trent Robinson a little better. But we've talked about the stat leaders. You know, those guys have been rightfully so praised for the leadership and the performance they had in Columbia. But who was the player who provided maybe the hidden leadership, the guy who maybe helped set the tone in practice in the locker room or the scout team for this season that was crucial to y'all's success?
That's a good one. So I had I have a JV player. I have 2 JV players that practice with varsity every day. So one, Clarence Roberts, he has a thing where he can get under people's skin very easily. So he's always on our second team. And somehow him and one of my top 2 players, that's DeMarcus, they're getting into it, but he's truly pushing them. And he's, you know, slower guy, but he, you know, it's very hard to get past him. You look at him, you'll be like, oh, I'm just going to blow past him, but it's a lot harder. So I think he always made practice competitive. You know, the red team could be down. It can be 14-4, and you would think it's, you know, state championship game, 2 points. So I think he was good at practice as anybody. Just getting that, he's the most vocal person. He wasn't even 4-year varsity, because he loved being there. So that's one. And then secondly, my point guard that came off the bench, Quentin McGill. So he's our unspoken leader. He's, you know, he always try to bring people together. Really good kid. He prays before the team every day. He breaks down every huddle. So I think, you know, his leadership didn't go, you know, didn't publicly get noticed a lot. But I think without him, because he was a kid 1 year, you know, he towards ACL, football, basketball, guys we couldn't play. So he literally, like, you know, embraced everything. Every time guys got mad, he brought people together. He's just a great kid.
Awesome, Coach. Well, last question before we get you on to the rest of your day. Thank you so much for coming on. But what is the first non-basketball thing you're going to do now that the season's over? What's on your bucket list? You're going to hit a round of golf now that spring is coming. What are your plans for the off season?
Well, actually, man, I'm behind, but I need to start planning. I need to start doing my half of planning a wedding. So we're getting married August 7th. And I've kind of been like, man, if you let me get through the season, then now I'm locked into it. So I need to go get my tux sizes. I need to go get everybody in my party tux sizes. And then my assistant coach, Demonte Jacobs, I'm in his wedding that's in May. So I need to go get fitted for his by, probably the next week or so, or I'll be behind. So just doing those things. But I think that is the best. Like, I got to take my daughter to the park last week. So that's been like the peaceful, just seeing her run around is like, it's so much you do with her and my fiance. You don't really think about basketball. You're at like a ease. So just taking care of that stuff, man, and getting breaks, trying to stay out the gym, which is kind of hard with my AAU ties. But doing that, I think I may go up to Charleston next week. We have it's the AD clinic up there. They want to do some recognition for state champs. So I think I'll drive up there Monday, relax a day, and talk fellowship with other coaches. But that's pretty much what the offseason looks like for me.
Now, so you'll never forget 25-26. We had two rings in the same year.
Two rings, right? So, and I'm paying for both of them, right? but yeah, man. So I'm blessed. God's been blessing myself, my family, my program. So I mean, I think this whole offseason, I have a smile on my face.
Well, thanks for joining us, Coach. We'll let you get on to the rest of your day, and we look forward to having you on again sometime.
Definitely love the opportunity. Thank y'all again, and have a good one.
Thanks, Coach.
That is Coach Trent Robinson. First state championship for Westwood High School. He's so impressive, and we'll talk more about him a little bit later. We've got to get on to our next guest, but I think you're going to echo these thoughts when we do talk about it, Steve, which is how great is it to see a young coach like that have that kind of success? We may be watching the next Tim Whipple or Thomas Ryan right there before our very eyes, and we just got to speak with him. Congratulations to Coach Robinson and the Westwood program. And all the state champions. We're going to talk more about those state champions on the girls' side when we come back. We still have baseball to cover with Corey Welch coming up in about 30 minutes. But next up in the second quarter, we've got Akeem Ballin from Prep Hoops South Carolina. We'll talk in girls' basketball state champions when we come back. It's Steve Hall, Matt Smith on Four Quarter Friday.
The Barn Dominium Company wants to help you build your dream home with your dream space to watch the games and entertain your friends and family. Make your dream a reality. Visit thebarndominiumco.com. That's thebarndominiumco.com for floor plans, photo galleries, locations, and to learn more about us.
Oh, man. The building is on fire.
Emergencies and accidents happen. When you're in the middle of a fire or water event, all you want is for things to return to normal as soon as possible. Resto Pros of the Midlands is with you, guiding you through the process and working with you to get your home or office back in working order. They'll answer your questions, discuss procedures, and can act as your advocate when it comes to processing your insurance claim. RestoProsMidlandsSC.com. Open 24/7 when you need them. Quality that is guaranteed.
When playing sports, you want a coach that will fight for you. At Hewitt D'Amaduro's Law Firm, we've got your back. Whether it's personal injury, insurance disputes, negligence, or wrongful death, our team delivers exceptional legal services that makes meaningful difference in the lives of the individuals and families we work for. Visit hdlawsc.com. hdlawsc.com. Hewitt D'Amaduro's, we're on your team.
Check the statewide high school scoreboard every Friday night on the Chief Sports app.
listening to the State of South Carolina's weekly high school show, Four Quarter Friday, hosted by Matt Smith and Steve Hall, part of the Chief Sports Network, and proudly presented by the South Carolina Athletic Coaches Association.
I keep believing, no plans on leaving, even if we have a losing season. Pride is a capital letter on my baseball cap. It's what holds us together around this dot on the map. Now it's the color I bleed in the stitches in my stitches in my stitches in my stitches in my pride is a capital letter on my baseball cap. It's what holds us together around this dot on the map. It's the color I bleed in the stitches in my shoes and my jacket matching pride.
Welcome back to Four Quarter Friday. Matt Smith and Steve Hall are here with you. And when we talk girls hoops, especially championship level, we've got to bring in Akeem Ballum from Prep Hoops South Carolina. Akeem, thank you so much for joining us. There's no way we could wrap our heads around all that took place at the Colonial Life Arena, all the champions that were crowned, and Blythewood, and Military Magnet, North Augusta, and on, so we had to bring you on. Welcome back to Four Quarter Friday.
How's it going? How's it going? Hopefully everything's been going great. It's been, you know, it's been, I guess, a week ever since we had a chance to really digest everything that indeed happened at the CLA. But yeah, it was an incredible atmosphere. It was actually, believe it or not, the first time I've actually had a chance to cover, state championships at Colonial Life Arena. I've covered them at USC Aiken. I've covered them at Florence before, but that was my first time getting that experience to be at Colonial Life Arena. So that was really, really, really amazing. If you see behind me, I'm in a hotel room. I'm actually up here in North Carolina, having the chance to cover the state championships up here. So yeah, absolutely for sure. As you can guess, I'm definitely a busy guy.
Akeem, thanks for joining us, man. Like, golly, you're doing North Carolina too. I mean, you just love girls hoops, man. That's why we have you on. This is the second time we've had you on, so we really appreciate it. It was a privilege to watch you work in Columbia at the CLA. This guy works his butt off to bring coverage to girls hoops in South Carolina, now that we know North Carolina. So let's get through these games, because we got a lot to talk about, Akeem. Let's start off with the 2A girls. Landrum holds on to win after a furious offensive start to the game. They went to a 20-10 lead. 20 out of the first 45 points came in that first quarter. Tell us what you saw, and of course, I'm sure you're going to talk about Delaney Caldwell, the sophomore for Landrum.
For sure, for sure. Whenever if you're trying to get a victory over the Cardinals, you have to find a way to contain Delaney Caldwell. This was actually her first season with Landrum. She transferred from Spartanburg Christian, and if I remember correctly, I believe she had 19 points in that game. She was really, she displayed exactly why Landrum wanted her. And she was really that big player for the Cardinals that was so integral in being able to get that win. I believe that Landrum Atlantic Collegiate game, that was probably the best game of the entire championship week. Because like you said, it came right down to the wire. Landrum had that 46-45 lead. Atlantic Collegiate, if I remember correctly, actually had the final possession in that game, and they tried a three-pointer, and it didn't go through, sealing the victory for the Cardinals. If I remember correctly, that's their first state win in their history for girls basketball. So yeah, definitely huge for Landrum, but I feel like we shouldn't necessarily take away anything from Atlantic Collegiate. I mean, this was a school that was only founded just a couple of years ago, and the waves that they have made in the realm of girls basketball throughout South Carolina have been massive. So I feel like I feel like this is a program that we can definitely for sure watch in the coming years. But yeah, it's, you know, this is and I have to also give credit to, you know, Micah Davis. She had a big game as well for Atlantic Collegiate. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, Delaney Caldwell, I mean, like, there's a reason as to why I'm going to be writing an article soon about sophomores, and Delaney is definitely going to be in that article. So yeah, definitely props to both teams. Both teams played great.
Yeah, and that's one of those. Go ahead, Steve.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Smitty.
Well, all I was going to say is, you know, that's kind of, as you said, newcomers and splashy. And that, but the rest of the weekend, I thought, was defined by programs that we anticipated being challenging for state championship. I mean, you've got, I was just looking at Blythewood repeated and Walhalla repeated and Berkeley repeated. So it's just that it's so interesting. You had that dichotomy of, okay, these are the new kids on the block, and then there was some big bullies there as well that just, you know, did what you anticipated them doing when you started covering them way back when, early in the season.
And it's very interesting because going into state, one of the things that caught my attention was the fact that five of the six teams, when you look at the classifications, five of the six teams that had won state last year in Florence were back for more this year at the CLA. The only one was the 2A, Andrew Jackson, who was eliminated in the upper state, if I remember correctly, by Landrum. So you're absolutely correct about that. You know, you had Blythewood winning, you had Military Magnet winning, Walhalla winning, North Augusta winning, once again, Berkeley. And it's interesting because one of the things that really stuck out to me was after the 1A game, after Military Magnet had defeated Great Falls, I actually had a chance to chat a little bit with Coach Nathaniel Taylor. And he actually told me just how much this had meant to him. You know, he actually told me that, you know, because of all of the, you know, because it had become a question of where state championships were going to be year in and year out, that he was actually afraid that he would never get the chance to win a state championship at Colonial Life Arena. Remember, it was in 2019-2020 when they started this big time run, when Military Magnet really began establishing itself as one of the top teams to beat in the 1A realm. The first time they were at state, they had actually lost, and that was at Colonial Life Arena. They lost 60-50 to, I believe it was, High Point Academy. So that definitely meant a lot for sure for Coach Nathaniel Taylor. I mean, the thing with Military Magnet, they play a bunch of 4A and 5A teams at the beginning of the season. So that was one of the things that stuck out to me. But, you know, but Great Falls, they have a seventh grader, Mackenzie Beatty, who is going to be a name to watch in the coming season. So, yes, certainly watch out for her as well. You think about Blythewood. It was not that long ago that Blythewood was 0-19. You know, but they steadily kept on climbing up the ranks, and now they're back-to-back state champions. They got that big three: Chase Thomas, Haley Hightower, India Williams, all college commits, by the way. But they also have a very interesting eighth grader as well in Kirsten Fulton, who's going to be a name to watch as well.
Akeem, you just mentioned the Blythewood and Wando matchup. It was such a great game, first of all. In the first half, McKenna Reynolds for Wando was just going off. And I was curious what you thought was the difference for Blythewood in the second half, where they, I believe McKenna might have only made one bucket in the last half of basketball. What did you see? Did they do anything differently, or did you have a chance to ask Coach McElveen about that?
I didn't have a chance to ask Coach McElveen about, in fact, I think maybe I did. It's been such a blur as of late, but yeah, you could definitely see that there certainly was a difference. And I think a lot of that did have to do with how they were able to play McKenna Reynolds. But I think not only was that such a huge difference, I think another one of the big differences was, for some reason, Wando did not take advantage of the size advantage that they would have had in the interior with Ava Rush. I mean, the East Carolina commit. So I was kind of surprised that even when Blythewood defensively were starting to limit the touches that McKenna was getting, I was sort of thinking, okay, maybe they change up their game plan a little bit and they start to take advantage of that interior size advantage that they had in the paint with Ava Rush. But that wasn't something that happened. And I think it was kind of emblematic, really, of the entire week. I saw a lot of guard play, and the guard play, it seemed like, was really outdoing a lot of the interior play. It seemed like that was the case in the 5-a-D-1 game with Wando and Blythewood, where they were able to really limit Ava Rush. It seemed like that was the case as well with the 4-a game with North Augusta and Westside, where we really did not see all that much from Kalia Hartwell. So that, I think, was one of the main themes, really, of the entire weekend, where really we saw a lot of, really a lot of great guard play, but a couple of the, what I call them front court forces, and Ava Rush and Kalia Hartwell, they really did not, do much. So, and Kalia Hartwell, by the way, at Westside, she's getting Division I offers as well. So that was, sort of a surprise, but absolutely, that was, that was key for Blythewood. And in the 4A case, it was also key once again for North Augusta winning their 7th championship in 10 tries.
Just incredible. Look, you have to feel for Greenville a little bit. All those fans there, and then both their boys team and girls team lose in great games, fantastic games, fantastic finishes. The girls lost to Berkeley and the boys lost to Westwood. We had Trent Robinson on in our last segment. But Akeem, I wanted to ask you, you may have mentioned it. I want to make sure I catch everybody, but I know Elena Carter is only a sophomore from Berkeley, but 29 points, one of the stars of the weekend. What kind of college offers is she going to be looking at coming up? I mean, with guards, it's different in different levels, but I'm just curious about her because those numbers that she put up really jumped off the page in leading Berkeley to a back-to-back state championships.
Now that she has indeed led Berkeley to back-to-back state championships, and now, like you said, she had the, on the girls' side, she had the performance of championship week / championship weekend at the CLA. Like you said, those 29 points was, and like I said, was really emblematic of what we've seen pretty much all of championship season, not only on the high school league side, but also on the Skeezer side as well. When you look at Madison Pojani at First Baptist, Emery McClure at Dorchester Academy. But Elena Carter, like you said, those 29 points, I feel like I've been looking at Elena Carter possibly as a high, maybe a high Division II prospect, but I feel like that after she did that, I'm really interested to see exactly what happens this travel season, because I feel like that there are probably some Division I programs, maybe some lower level Division I programs, maybe even some lower level, possibly Power 4 programs that may very well take a second look at Elena Carter and thinking, okay, this is somebody that we may want to bring to our program. So Elena Carter, I'm really excited to see what is in store for her these next couple of years, because I imagine that after what she did after what she did leading Berkeley to those back-to-back, I imagine that is definitely going to do wonders for her recruiting.
I'm curious, Akeem, as an evaluator, because that's a really big part of your job and what y'all do over at Prep Hoops Girls, is evaluate these players from the collegiate perspective, if I'm not wrong. But when I noticed about Elena, and that I was just, me and Smitty are on the same wavelength here, because that was one of the most impressive performances that I've seen in person in quite a while. She has almost this quick twitch that you don't see in a lot of girls' hoops in South Carolina. I mean, your elite players are going to have that ability when you start talking about D2, D1. But what did you see from an evaluation for her skill set?
One of the things that I saw was just her ability to really take over a game, and her ability to, and the thing is, they needed those 29 points, because if I remember correctly, it was a close game, Berkeley and Greenville. So this wasn't a case of stat padding. Elena Carter absolutely had to carry her team to that victory. They needed all of those 29 points. And one of the things that really got to me was just how unfazed she is, you know, by the big moment. I mean, I was talking a little bit earlier about Mackenzie Beatty at Great Falls. I mean, yeah, she led, you know, her team in scoring, but she also, if I remember correctly, missed all of her free throws and she turned the ball over, you know, in that game between Great Falls and Military Magnet. That's going to happen with a seventh grader. But the thing is, that also happens sometimes with younger players, even at the sophomore level. But the fact that Elena Carter looked like a seasoned vet out there overall and was able to do it against top-tier competition. I mean, Greenville coming into the season was one of the favorites to win 5A D2. When you look at how stacked that team is with Ava Owens, Michaela Asenian, who had transferred over from Powdersville, that was a big game, and that was a huge, that's really great competition for Elena Carter to really showcase her skills against. And I imagine we'll see that more, you know, on the travel side. But yeah, you're absolutely right. That, you know, that ability to change directions, that ability to be able to score at will, that ability to be able to just, you know, do so many of the things that these college coaches are looking for. Those are all huge attributes for any player to have. And those are going to be big reasons as to why I think that, you know, her recruiting status is definitely going to take a huge step in that right direction. Absolutely.
Akeem, let's move to the Walhalla Keenan game, because if there's any school in the state, there's several, that is known for being a powerhouse in basketball, it's Keenan in Columbia, South Carolina. But Walhalla beat them 70-58, and I don't know that I really saw that coming, but from the very first quarter, I saw how good of a team Walhalla was. They passed the basketball very, very well. What was so difficult for teams playing against Walhalla this season?
What was so difficult, like you said, is the fact that they have, you know, they're one of the best coach teams in the state with Coach Byron Winfrey. But the thing is, really, with Walhalla is what makes them so difficult to beat is they have kids that absolutely can go off. I mean, you look at Bailey Cannon, you look at Cammie Roach, you look at Miley White, you look at Ashlyn Frick, who, if I remember correctly, she's a junior, and she had a 20-some-odd point game as well in that state championship against Keenan. But like you said, they play team basketball. And when you have a team like that especially at those higher levels, when you have a team like that that's able to play team basketball, but yet you have kids that are able to, you know, that are able to score at will, it can go off. That's the type of thing that can really make a team like Walhalla really difficult to beat. And it's exactly why they were able to go wire to wire, if I remember correctly, as the top ranked 3A team in the state. That was the big thing with Walhalla. But, you know, but with Keenan, like, and I'm with you. I was thinking that maybe that was going to be a little bit of a closer game. I mean, it was the, if I remember correctly, you know, you had Taylor Lee Sutton, who was, of course, leading Keenan, another one of the top sophomores. Like I said, sophomore play was really the theme of championship season. But yeah, that's what's so difficult about beating Walhalla is that they have a good mix, you know, of, you know, really talented players, but also they share the basketball very well. And when you have that, there's a reason as to why they're now back-to-back state champions and why they were able to, you know, accomplish something, you know, with Walhalla Athletics that hadn't been accomplished since the 1950s. So that's a big, you know, that's a big thing, you know, for Walhalla up there for their athletic program. But yeah, shout out to them as well. I mean, there's a reason as to why they're so difficult to defeat.
You know, I'd like to hear Akeem Ballin joining us from Prep Hoops South Carolina. Who impresses you as a coach? Because as you talk about these programs, and you just went over a lot of players in the last three answers, and there obviously a lot of those players have returned and they're growing. But as a coach, who really catches your eye that has been able to build programs? Because you just talking about Walhalla, that's Byron Humphrey there. Like, what are these coaches doing so well that is able to? They're able to sustain success year in and year out and build not just runs, but programs, years of success.
I think the main thing is two things. Number one, you know, they're able to they're able to really get in players, you know, transferring from other schools. I mean, and you know, North Augusta definitely sticks out to me with Coach Al Young. And that was another one of the things that, you know, that got to me was, you know, in that North Augusta West Side game, one of their top scorers was, if I remember correctly, was Azaria Sapp. She had transferred from nearby Aiken. And if I remember correctly, she was the best player at Aiken. And I talked to Coach Young after that, and I asked her about Azaria Sapp. And one of the things that he said to me was, oh, you know, she's really been able to, you know, to be a sponge and really been able to, you know, integrate herself in terms of, you know, how they do things at North Augusta, because, you know, how they do things at North Augusta is going to be different from how they do things at Aiken. That's why they've been able to win 7 state championships in 10 seasons. So I think that's a big, you know, that's a big thing as far as like being able to get those, you know, those transfer kids. That was the same thing, obviously, that worked with Landrum, with Delaney Caldwell. So I think that's one thing. But I also think another thing is, you know, really getting these kids to buy into team culture. And that can be difficult to do, really, on not just the girls' side, but also on the boys' side as well, because you have some kids that are thinking primarily about, okay, they're thinking, you know, about travel ball and they're thinking about recruitment. But when you look at the perspective of it from a college coach, you know, or even a high school coach, who's going to be, you know, those players that are thinking about, you know, becoming part of a winning program? Who are winning players? It's one thing to put up winning stats. There's lots of kids all over the place that know how to put up winning stats, but who are those that are winning players that do the little things that don't necessarily always show up on the scoreboard? I think those are things that certainly a lot of coaches definitely look at, because a lot of that, it goes past what you see on the stat sheet.
Akeem, a few last questions here before we get you out of here. As we know, you still got a lot of hours to put in. if you could pick, I know this might be very difficult, but who is the top guard, or actually, let's say top three. Let's say top three guards coming back to play next year that have a chance to lead their teams to a state championship next year.
Top three guards that have a chance to lead their team to state. You know, when I think about it, I definitely have to start with Kaylee Lucas, the 2028 at South Point. I mean, they've been so close yet so far these last few years that you have to believe that ultimately South Point's time is coming. And the thing is, it's one of those situations where with South Point next year, Janiyah Cunningham, who's their big, she's going to be a senior. So I feel like this is, I don't want to say now or never, but it's one of those situations. It's, you know, kind of, you know, getting to that point with South Point, pardon the pun, but it's, you know, but it's a situation I feel like, you know, when I think about that team, you just had to think they're so close yet so far, but, you know, but that North Augusta West Side, I guess you could say, duopoly at the top of 4A. And I think all of those teams are coming back to 4A. So that's, you know, that's definitely one that I'm certainly thinking about. I'm also very high on Taylor Lee Sutton. I mean, at Keenan, because one thing about it, if I remember correctly, I think that was her first time playing at state. And sometimes, you know, when you're under those bright lights for the first time, I feel like that is, that can definitely be something that can get to some kids. And she had a pretty good game in that state championship game against Walhalla, even in a loss. So definitely for sure, watch out for her. And another guard that I'm looking at that 2030 Layla Singletary at Irmo. And the reason as to why I'm looking at, you know, as to why I'm looking at her is because I feel like she established herself really as probably the 2030 of 2030s across South Carolina. And I think one of the things with Irmo is that another one of their best players, I think it was Abby Livingston, she was hurt for a pretty good bit of the season. So I'm really interested to see exactly how they're able to develop, because let's just say she was healthy. It probably is a situation where maybe Irmo is where we saw the Berkeleys and the Greenvilles. So I'm very interested to see exactly how they're developed. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been talking about guard play pretty much this entire episode, because I think it was, you know, the theme definitely of State Week at the CLA. So I'm really excited to see exactly how so many of these guards that are coming back across the state are really able to, really able to develop and lead these teams to success.
Look, I don't want to think about 2030, Akeem. You said a 2030 guard.
Eighth grader?
Will we have jetpacks by 2030? Will we even be playing basketball? We'll be on the moon.
I watched over 100 teams this year, man. I mean, it's one of those situations where, like, you know, sometimes some kids just stand out so much to the point where, you know, and the thing is, I think I may have just completely skipped over the 2029s. Oh, and by the way, I'm glad that I stopped myself for skipping over the 2029s, because I completely forgot to mention Ashlyn Evans at Burns and Madeline Dates at Goose Creek. I mean, those are two other names as well that I'm also really interested to see. Burns was a really good team this year. Their problem was they couldn't beat Dorman. And I was also surprised at Goose Creek, because they had actually beat Berkeley twice earlier this season, but Berkeley got them, you know, in the playoffs. So yeah, all of those are definite names for sure that, you know, that I'm really interested to see in the future. And I think are, you know, really establishing those teams as a statewide contenders.
Gosh, something you said, Akeem, about that eighth grader, 2030 is an eighth grader, right? If I'm not mistaken, there was one other eighth grader, and I'm trying to find in my notes here. I want to say, was she on the North Augusta squad or the Berkeley squad? Does that ring any bells to you?
I got to go back and I got to check my notes to see. I think there is maybe an eighth grader possibly on the North Augusta side. I got to check the Berkeley side as well.
That's what it was. I think it was North Augusta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyways.
But you know what? You know, as far as I'm – that's another one of those things that sustains success. And that is one of those reasons where, as to why I've been saying, as long as Coach Al Young is drawing up the plays for the Jackets, they're going to be in the statewide conversation. Absolutely. So he's really good at developing players. Also a couple of 2031s, like I said, with Beatty, as well as Nalasia Gibson at Ben Lippin. So there's guard talent honeycombed all throughout the state.
Well, Akeem, we're going to get you out of here. I'll say this. You, with so much mentioned about North Augusta, you know who Coach Al Young reminds me of?
Who?
Phil Jackson. He's just the even-keeled, you know, he's Mr. Miyagi. He's sitting on the sideline. He's just – everything that's hard is behind the scenes. So those girls are prepared, and I just – and there's just not a better person than Coach Al Young. But thanks again for coming on. What's up next for Prep Girls, Prep Hoops, South Carolina Girls?
Well, I'm going to be up at Dorman next weekend, actually at the Carolina Classic. This is my first time ever working the Carolina Classic, so I'm certainly excited for that. Certainly excited that I think it was in North Carolina the last few years, but I think it's returning to South Carolina. So I'm planning on making a trip this upcoming next Saturday for the Carolinas Classic. And then I'm hitting the road for what we call the Prep Girls Hoop Circuit. I think one of their first events in the Southeast is going to be up in North Carolina, where I'm at currently right now speaking with you. But I'm planning on doing that, and just, you know, really just got a lot planned in the works for sure. I just updated my 2029 rankings. Got a lot planned in the works for sure.
Akeem, we love having you on, man. I just want to say, enjoy your continental breakfast.
Good call, man. Good call. Absolutely.
Well, thanks for all you do for South Carolina Girls Hoops. Akeem, we'll check in with you soon.
Sounds like a plan. Can't wait till the next time. Absolutely.
All right, take care.
I love the I think you just might have gotten Al Young a new nickname, Steve. How about the Zen Master, Al Young? When you win seven state championships over the course of about a 10-year span, you get to be chill like that, right? Because you've seen it all. You've seen it all. You've seen the ups and the downs. and you know what the ending is going to look like if you've put in the work. And man, I think girls basketball in our state, you saw it though. You saw it, Steve, the support that it gets. I love that. That it was not like that 20 years ago, but that's where girls basketball is. I mean, a lot of that, yes, has to do, tip of the cap to Dawn Staley and the Gamecock program. I think it's energized the whole state. And I know you were into it. I know you were into it because you and I were texting, and you and Rob were taking in all those games and those great, fantastic finishes in the girls' championships.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. But before we get to turning the page, we got to hit a quick commercial break. We have Coach Corey Welch from Diamond Prospects on. And right after this break, we're going to start talking about South Carolina High School baseball because it is now officially spring now that basketball is complete.
Palm Casual Outdoor Patio Furniture proudly supports high school athletics across South Carolina. If it's time to make your outdoor space the best it can be, with lifetime warranties and guarantees, visit one of our Palm Casual stores in Myrtle Beach, Bluffton, Somerville, or Mount Pleasant. PalmCasual.com. PalmCasual.com. Turn on the lights. It's Friday night.
At Moultrie Insurance, our agents are working for you. Our commercial lines of coverage are well-sourced and intimately chosen. We offer commercial lines of coverage such as business owners, umbrella, property, auto, or general liability coverage, and evaluate every option to find what fits you best. Like a good offensive coordinator, we will draw up the plays, but only run with what you feel comfortable. Get in touch with our quarterback, Perry Orth, or our head coach, Frank, by visiting MoultrieIns.com. MoultrieIns.com.
It's the Four Quarter Friday High School Show on the Chief Sports Network. Proudly covering high school athletics across the state of South Carolina with accurate, trusted analysis, in-depth interviews with coaches, media, and players, and quality information. Every Friday at 9 a.m., we're here for you. Proud partner of the South Carolina Athletic Coaches Association.
This is Four Quarter Friday. Matt Smith, Steve Hall, and we are so happy to bring in Corey Welch from Diamond Prospects. This is the fourth quarter now on Four Quarter Friday. I'm on my fourth cup of Java this morning because I was up late last night. I know, Corey, you're on the road all the time. Thank you so much for joining us. I was at the Classic in Georgetown, and that's in my backyard, and I loved seeing all the talent there, all the great teams, but there is absolutely no way that we can give the insight that you and Austin Alexander can bring us from Diamond Prospects. So thank you so much for joining us. And how did you enjoy Georgetown?
Oh, man, I love it. I enjoy it so much, I'm going back next week as well. So you're speaking of the coffee. I grabbed one on the way on the way in. You know, just we're on spring break up here in the upstate, believe it or not. So that means I got all the kids, but we're hitting the road and we're going to see some more baseball.
Well, let's start right there in the upstate. Dorman High School, they win at the Classic. And coming in, we knew they had a lot of talent. They were one of those clubs that has a long lineup that, you know, 1 through 9, they can hurt you. And you don't often see that or don't always see that at the high school level. And there were a lot of college prospects around. But if you would zero in on Dorman for a second, tell us what you saw and specifically from those players, some of the college prospects that are in that lineup.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up because I was talking to a couple of the scouts that were there and things like that. And, you know, 1 through 9, there's college players all in that lineup, just littered through it. It's as deep as the lineup as we have seen in a long time. And the way they rolled through the Classic, only allowing 2 runs in 4 games, I mean, I can't think of a team you know, I've covered this closely for 10 years. And I know you guys probably know a little bit more, but in the last 10 years, I haven't seen a team dominate the event quite like that. Not just that, but also winning the Home Run Derby, the Sportsmanship Award, and the base running contest, even on Saturday night. But, you know, the guy that kind of stole the show for them was Palmer Hornick, the MVP. I felt like going into the event, you know, even going into the championship game, I thought it was his to lose. And then even in the championship game, to go 2-for-2 with a double and a couple of RBIs, I think he hit over 600 for the event. Friday, he had two home runs in that game. And then the crazy thing that he didn't do is he's really good on the mound. He's up to 91, 92 with a good slider. And you know, even throughout the entire weekend, they didn't need him, more or less. You know, it's just so deep, starting with what Connor Wells did on Thursday night, punching out 10. States Fars really elevated his game, and we got the chance to see Brennan New in the championship game on the mound. It's not every day you go to a four-day tournament, and on day four you have an arm up to 90 who's committed to Arkansas to throw the championship game. So, I mean, that's it in a nutshell, and there's so many more. I know they came back on Wednesday and started region play and won 14-4, so they're ready to go.
Corey, thanks for joining us, man. That's exactly what we love talking about on Four Quarter Friday, is just the players in the state that are so talented, especially in baseball. And it is making me cringe a little bit now, because you just said Arkansas. I'm like, and I'm a Gamecock fan, and I'm like, golly, guys, let's keep these guys in state. But anyways, I digress. But, you know, y'all made your run at Diamond Prospects through the first few big tournaments preseason. I don't know if they are they considered preseason tournaments at this point or regular
season? Yeah, they're actually regular season now. Technically, the regular season started a couple Fridays ago when everything kicked off. They changed that rule in the last 2 years, where it used to be, I believe it was 20 or 22 games and two tournaments. Now you just get 26 games, and you can use those however you wish. But I think in our terms, like, we still count that as the preseason, with region play starting on this past Monday. That's really the regular season, in my opinion. But
okay, now that y'all have gotten through that, like, what's your typical week going to look like for covering these games? And what are you looking forward to in the next couple weeks as far as some of these matchups that are coming up?
Yeah, I mean, right now, you know, we've already seen over 60 to 70 teams. We utilize the scrimmages and the preseason tournaments to really check off, kind of like coming down to Georgetown and seeing 8 teams in a day. I've done that for 4 straight Saturdays now. But now with the regular season started, you know, our goal is to go and see. We try our best to see every team in the state. For example, tonight I'm going over to Jail Man to see them and play Easley. I haven't had a chance to see those two teams. But we're, you know, especially here in the regular season, we're trying to more or less check boxes to make sure we don't miss anybody. And we're trying to be very thorough, you know, with our bigger events later in the year with Palmetto games. We want to have an opportunity to identify all these guys. For example, next week I'm coming down towards the beach. So I'm going to hit St. James. I'm going to hit Socastee and as they kick off region play in the coast as well. So we have guys, you know, all over the state. We try to hit 2 to 3 during the week. I know a big matchup here in the upstate next week is Fountain Inn and Southside Christian at Fuller Field. So we'll have somebody there for that. That'll be a matchup of two of the best lefties in the state. So, you know, we're just – and then we'll get into spring break. We'll hit some spring break events. That's kind of a reset again, you know, to see 8 to 10 teams and check back in. You ready, Corey, to see – go ahead. I was just saying, we gear towards trying to get our playoff predictions correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's another thing that you do. And I know you guys do so much at Diamond Prospects. And, Corey, if you can do it, if you can come back on with us, we want to have you on throughout the season a little bit, because we want to – and we'll dig into all that you do, because Diamond Prospects, you have team rankings and player rankings, and you're identifying players, maybe guys whose names aren't out there right now but will be out there as they hit your radar. And that's what I wanted to ask you about, is I watched you at the Classic as you were taking notes and everything. Tell me what you're looking for, because at Diamond Prospects, you're trying to identify some of these talented players. Obviously, there's things, the measurables are going to go into it, but tell me what you're looking at kind of from a baseball perspective, because that could be instructive to young players and parents. What do you want to see? Because you get to talk to college coaches. What are they looking for as well as kids move from high school and they try to earn that scholarship at the next level?
Yeah, I mean, really the main thing I tell people, I get that question all the time, and we want to be the almost the middleman for colleges. And in that sense, like, you have to put on a lot of different hats as well. You know, looking at a Carter Nash, who's a freshman at Dorman, obviously, you know, with the way the rules are now, you know, not necessarily for college for them, but how, you know, you put down those notes, and kind of one thing I do is I put down what I think. And then I go back and look at that or 2 to 3 years. That's how I feel like I kind of get better as an evaluator and see if I am right or if I am wrong and things like that. And then you have, for example, a Braylon Dean from Dorman, who's an uncommitted senior that to me really jumped on the radar this past weekend with his ability to hit. So you have to, and you also have to look at it. You're evaluating, you know, you have a Taj Marshawn from James Island. When I look at him, he's already committed to Ole Miss. So I kind of put a pro lens on when I'm looking at him at that weekend, as opposed to an uncommitted senior who, you know, I think could slot at a Division II or a junior college and things like that. So I get tons of messages after the event. I know once I got home, I didn't touch anything Sunday night, but whenever I got home Monday and looked at my notes to get prepared for the website, like, I was blown away at how many talented players were down there last weekend. In my mind, that might have been the most talented one. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, you see it now, but then the big thing that you want to do is look back in 2 to 3 years and see what those kids, where they ended up, what they've done, maybe even further than that. It'll be interesting to see how many pro guys we may have had in Georgetown last weekend as well.
Yeah, that will be interesting. When Smitty told me what the lineup of games and the teams that were in it, I was like, oh my goodness. I mean, that's crazy. Yeah. Which was awesome to see the way the Classic had been able to honor Coach Mike Johnson in the first year since he's passed. So, such a big person in the state of high school baseball. But at Four Quarter Friday, we want to highlight small towns as much as possible, because community is a huge part of what coaches and players are all about. And can we get a little bit of a breakdown, Corey, of what teams, what players you're excited about from the 1A level? You know, preseason rankings came out in Johnstown, Louisville, Latta, Lakeview, and Lamar were your top five teams. Is that ranking kind of staying around for a little while, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. I think at the end of the day, I think Daniel Little at Abbeville, I know that may be a name you guys have heard in the past. They're going to be around as well. I know last week or earlier this week, Lakeview actually beat Johnsonville in a region opener. So that was interesting to see. And, you know, to me, with 1A baseball, it's, in the past couple of years, you kind of knew there was four, you know, 3 to 4 teams that were going to compete for a state title. And I think this year, looking at it, there could be up to 12, some teams that are not even in the polls and things like that. And once you get to the playoffs, it's an interesting, I like the format here in South Carolina, because it is double elimination. I know in some states it's actually single, but even if you get a favorite like a Johnsonville, Lakeview, Louisville, something like that, if you drop one game in that district, it resets everything, especially with the pitching rules and things like that. It really goes back to the depth of, you have to rely on that number three, number four, potentially number five arm to get you through. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, I feel like in the low country in 1A, that's where the strengths are, that one region. But, you know, up here, I think Abbeville could have a say at the end.
Well, going to 2A now, our boy Rob Bocknight at Batesburg-Leesville, they capped off a state championship last year. They were ranked number one preseason, and they played in the Opterra Invitational. Give us an update on some of the big teams and how Batesburg fared against a lot bigger teams in that Opterra Invitational, if you have that.
Yeah, Austin was there, and I know that they knocked off Lexington on Saturday and had a couple of other big games. I think at the end of the day, it's great that they got to play in that event because it allows you, kind of like what I just talked about, they'll see the benefits of that where their back-end arms and their rotation at early in the season have played high-caliber teams. So they'll have a chance as well. Another team that I saw in 2A that's going to be strong is Clinton. They're poised to have a really good year. I got to see them in Mid-Carolina over at Emerald a couple weeks ago. They're going to be good. And then Atlantic Collegiate, they're stacked with talent down there as well. So it's kind of a 5-6 team race in 2A. But hopefully Coach Bocknight, I know they're looking to repeat. And they have a big-time player in Braden Hallman who's committed to VCU that'll have a big say in how far they go in the postseason.
Well, let's keep going up the ladder. Corey, you got to see Southside Christian, and they've got some big-time arms. I know that Bozeman has been kind of limited by his agent, which is not something I dealt with when I was coming up. My agent was not limiting me in high school ball. But what do you see with 3A? And if you could, along with that answer, because as Steve just mentioned, like 1A, it seems like there's this pocket in the PD. But in kind of the top schools, like you mentioned, Dorman in the upstate. So along with what's going on in 3A and Southside Christian, what about where you're seeing the strengths of the teams based on kind of geography in the state?
I think in 3A, it's a Southside's to lose. They're kind of on a collision course with Oceanside. But, you know, when you're talking about the strength of geography, you're referring to players, like how that shifts around and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, you've got the PD, usually Myrtle Beach has always been a good area. The upstate, yeah. I feel like I'm hearing a lot about like some of the major teams, the big 5A teams in the upstate. There's a lot of strength there. So just the geography in terms of a lot of good players kind of in this cycle, where they're coming from.
Yeah. And this cycle is interesting, you know, and it's weird. There's no rhyme or reason to it. I remember a couple of years ago, like, I think, and we see it especially when we start our Palmetto games, we try to break them down by regions. But, you know, a couple of years ago, for example, the Charleston area was really down. Now, up in the last couple of years, it's become stronger. And the upstate was weak. And I feel like now it's coming back up. But, like, the most consistent area is the Midlands. I was in the PD maybe 3 weeks ago, and I was blown away. They have some really upcoming players, especially some pitching depth that I was really impressed with. So they're coming along just as well also.
Corey, last question for me before we get you out of here and get you back to the baseball field. An underdog or a dark horse that you're looking at that has surprised you from a team perspective that you think has a chance to make a run at the state championship this year?
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that. And some people across the state will call it an upstate bias. But if you look at what Burns High School has done in the last couple of weeks in baseball, you know, they've played a third of their season already, believe it or not, just because I was talking about the games. They played in the Steve Sanders tournament up here last weekend. Got rained out on Friday, so ended up playing 8 games in 8 days. Went 4-0 in the Steve Sanders, and then came down to the Opterra the very next day in Columbia and ended up winning that as well. That'll carry some merit whenever it gets to the postseason, and anytime you get weather and things start stacking. So for them to go 7-1 to win a premier tournament in Columbia and then also, you know, go 4-0. I think the way they did that tournament, there was a championship game, but three teams went 4-0. So it became one of those tiebreaker deals. So for them to play 8 games in 8 days and to win 7 of them, that kind of grabbed the attention of some guys across the state for sure.
Yeah, I could certainly see that. And I've actually seen a lot of footage of Burns hitters popping up on so they're getting some coverage. They're starting to make headlines there. Tell us, if you would, about Diamond Prospects, how you cover things. Because you keep mentioning you're in the upstate, but you were just here in Georgetown and you're coming back. So that's a lot of travel. I know Austin is in the Midlands. Tell us about how you guys cover it and kind of how we can follow along with what the players you're seeing and almost take the trips with you as you update your rankings at DiamondProspects.com.
Yeah, so this time of year, we have several different guys at work for us to kind of cover games throughout the week. We'll post on social media with Twitter or Instagram, you know, especially during the game. We do a lot of that kind of live, big time at bats and things like that. We've added in some player interviews, and we started podcasts. We do a weekly podcast, and we have players of the week. I shoot out stuff to the coaches anytime, you know, because it's good to know for our website. It's tough for the coaches and true baseball fans of even, like, if you're a parent at, you know, Fountain End High School, to really know what's going on in other parts of the state. So that's kind of what our main goal is to make sure everybody's in the loop. Every night I'm updating our region standings starting this time of year. And on our website after the games, we'll recap the games. I'm still like a traditionalist. I love to go back and I do like the old box score, and you know, you see that in a paper. I just put that online and then we'll recap it. And you know, at the end of the day, like, we want each player, and that when we roll up to the game, they know they're going to be taken care of if they perform and things like that.
Corey, let me ask you this, because you see more baseball probably than anybody, at least in our state, and you get to put your eyes on so many things. Coaches are focused on getting their team better. Scouts are just, you know, or college scouts are just looking at enriching their own program. So tell us, if you would, just as a baseball man, from what you see on fields across the state of South Carolina, if you could kind of get a message to the kids, like, let's do one thing better. Is there anything, like a skill that needs to be improved? What is it that young players, maybe you say, this will help take more players to the next level than anything else?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and I preach this to guys that I see and things like that, is you need to control the things that you can control. Effort, the ability to run the bases, and making routine plays, like that should happen every day. So I think it, and that's a tough ask for a high school kid. But if, you know, I also believe that, you know, players and young men will rise to the standard that you set. So if you hold that expectation of just playing the game the right way, doing the little things right, we talk about in baseball, like, there, I truly believe there are baseball gods. So if you do everything the right way, in some way, eventually it will reward you. So that's the big thing that I could bring.
No, that's part of our religion in my family, is that if you do all of the little things in baseball when nobody's looking, that the baseball gods will reward you long term. Like, that's our idea of karma, right?
Yeah, that's right.
If you go in and do the extra work and take the ground balls when nobody's watching, those are what are they? Ozzie Smith's the one that got the good hops, right? Because he was taking those balls.
Yeah.
Well, Corey, I appreciate you spending time with us. And please, I hate to put you on the spot, but please tell us you will come back, because, as we mentioned, you're kind of a scout for us too. We're not going to be able to see every team, but you and Austin Alexander at Diamond Prospects will be able to do that. What we want to do is celebrate these kids, these programs, and these coaches, and you can help us do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm honored by the opportunity to be here. So anytime you would like for me to come back, I'm more than welcome to.
I think we all want to talk baseball.
Yeah. Just especially this time of year. So.
Oh, it's so good. All right. Well, thank you, Corey. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Y'all have a great day.
That is Corey Welch, DiamondProspects.com. We wanted to close him out quickly enough where we can make sure we wrap this show up, because, Steve, I also want to revisit quickly with you our first two guests, Trent Robinson, newly crowned state champion. He's going to get married this summer. He's got a young child. He talked about John Combs and Akeem Ballum, who broke down girls basketball. So if you did not see any of those two guests live, we encourage you to go back through the Chief Sports app or our YouTube channel, Four Quarter Friday. Catch those interviews. Steve, I told you in the chat, Trent Robinson is fantastic. I would go play for him tomorrow.
Yeah, it was awesome, man. And he's you can tell how big of a community guy he is too. You know, and how big relationships are. And that was one of the things I was going to say as far as you asked a really good question to Corey there is like, what's the biggest thing that you could see kids working on across the state? And one thing I would add is just be where your feet are planted. Like have a pride about you where you're playing for your hometown. Like that means a lot. Not, you know, you might not see it or think about it as much on the day-to-day basis, but when you look back 10, 15, 20 years, that's going to mean so much. And when Trent Robinson's, you know, story and his team story of how they started all in JV, B team, you know, and they play together for a long time. And those guys are going to be brothers for life from being in each other's weddings and checking in and helping people, helping their friends through the tough things when they hit adversity and learning how to overcome that stuff, man. That this was a special episode, Smitty.
I think so. I'll tell you what I want to say to amplify the point you're making. So we just talked to Trent Robinson, who recently played college basketball himself. Okay, so let's not forget that. This is a guy that just went through all of that, and now he's coaching. He's a state championship coach. We talked to Akeem Ballum, who does all of that scouting for Prep Hoops, and he was pinpointing players and what they can do to make it to the next level. And then Corey Welch, who makes his living communicating from college coaches to high school coaches to high school players and trying to put them all together. And there was a common theme through there. Akeem was talking about making winning plays that don't show up in the stat sheet. Trent Robinson was talking about unsung heroes, things that happen in practice that nobody ever sees. And then Corey Welch is talking about, hey, the base running, as you just said, be where your feet are. In this era where all the talk in college from the fans' perspective and on talk shows is about NIL and the transfer portal, and everybody says it's all me, 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 all I heard from those three guests was all about it's ball. Ball doesn't change. It rewards those who put in the work. And I think that's such a good message for people like us, because instead of getting jaded, what I heard today was, nope, I won a state championship because my kids bought in and did the right things. Akeem Ballum is telling us that the players that are celebrating state championships and getting looks from colleges are the ones that are making winning plays, not stat padding plays, winning plays. And then Corey Welch is just sitting there talking about doing all the hard work and then and being a part of a winning program and making winning commitments to the program where you are. That's one of the things that college coaches are looking for. So I'm just telling you, you may think it's all about the me, me, me generation. We just heard from three people who see high school players every single day, and all they talked about was team, team, team.
Exactly, man. Well, speaking of team, our team on Inside the Gamecocks, the morning show is coming up next, Smitty. Just for everybody's realization about our podcast version on Spotify, JC Sherbert helps us with that, getting that uploaded every week. And so we're very thankful for all the work he does, and Jamie as well. From Inside the Gamecocks that supports us and the entire team at Chief Sports Network. Thanks to Rob Williams for last week. It was a lot of fun hanging out with him. Not being the only guy there was a real joy. So, Smitty, any final words before we head out?
No, other than you're right. We're team, 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 right? You just said it. Thank you to JC. Thank you to Phil Molnax and Jamie Bradford and everybody that's a part of the Chief Sports Network. We're back with you. More Four Quarter Friday next week, 8:30 a.m. Mark it down, subscribe, get notifications. And if you missed it, definitely go back and check out that interview with Westwood High School basketball coach Trent Robinson. So for Steve Hall and Matt Smith, saying so long for now.
From the Lowcountry to the Upstate, From the Midlands to the PD, we've got you covered. This is our state. South Carolina matters to us, all of South Carolina. We love talking ball, and we love talking ball with you. Thank you for tuning into the Four Quarter Friday High School Show. Every Friday at 9 a.m. on the Chief Sports Network. Proudly presented by the South Carolina Athletic Coaches Association.